Okay, today's daf is Mem Zayin. We're going to start where we ended yesterday, Mem Vav Amud Bet. I realized I made a mistake at the very end reading. So we had L'shem Shisha Gvarim. Let's just start from the Mishnah. There were six things that the Zevach Nizbach. L'shem Zevach, for the sake of the Korban, which the Gemara then said, which means Ola L'shem Ola. Here, let's go through the six in the Gemara. It's simpler. So Rav Yehuda says in the name of Rav, okay, I'm a Rav Yehuda, I'm a Rav, Ola L'shem Ola La, Fuke L'shem Shlamim Dilo, right? It has to be. We're basically going to darshan this pasuk, okay? Ola Yisherech Nichoach L'Hashem, right? It's, I believe it's Vayikra Aleph Tet, and the pasuk reads, let's just read the pasuk. They're going to basically find all six. Yesterday I combined two at the end by accident. That was my mistake at the end with the L'shem and all that. So it's Biktira Kohenet Akolam is Becha, okay? Ola Ishe Reach Nichoach L'Hashem. Okay, so we're going to darshan all of them out of these five words. Ola L'Shem Ola. Lafuke L'Shem Shlamim Dilo. Ishim L'Shem Ishim. Okay, so Ishe has to be for the sake of fire. Lafuke Kevava Dilo, right? Can't be slices. Reach L'shem Reach, okay, it has to be that you do it in a way that a smell will come rather than burning it, you know, roasting it outside and then burning it inside. Lafuke barim shatzlam v'hela andilo, right, that you roasted them outside and then put them on. And then here's an aside. Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Rabbi barim shatzlam v'hela en bah mishum Reach. Okay, that's the end. Nichoach l'shem hanachat ruach. Has to be Nachat Ruach. Now here I read it, Hanachat Ruach L'Hashem. That was my mistake. To be L'Shem, Hanachat Ruach, period. Has to be that it's pleasing in the eyes of God, which is different than L'Hashem. L'Shem Mishamar Vaya Olam. Then it has to be L'Shem Hashem. It has to be intended for God as opposed to intended for somebody else. So there's exactly what Hanachat Ruach is a good question, right? It's not so clear exactly what that means, how that's different than the others. Okay. I just feel like we're missing something because that was five. Shat, right? Hazevach, L'shem Zevach. L'shem Zoveach isn't in the Pasuk, okay? Isn't in these drashot. L'shem Zoveach is the one that's missing. There's only five words in the Pasuk, so they could only darshan five things. But I guess it's obvious to them that it has to be L'shem Zoveach. Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav Chatat sheshchata l'shem ola psula l'shem chulin kshera. If you take a chatat and you do it l'shem ola, that's going to be pasul. That's right. That goes back to the very first thing we learned in the Masechet l'shem, right? L'shma, wrong intent. But if you do it l'shem chulin, it's okay. If you say I'm shechting this korban chatat, but you say I'm shechting it for the kavana of not a korban, just stam. It's kasher. Why? Amar Rabbi Elazar, my time of the Rav, v'lo yechalalu kadshei b'nei Yisrael. Okay, this is v'lo yechalalu kadshei b'nei Yisrael l'sheirimu l'Hashem, which sounds like don't desecrate them, right? Don't do anything wrong with them. But now they're reading it very differently. They're taking it out of pshat. What does it mean? You cannot cause them lo yechalalu. You cannot cause them to be chulin. In other words, if you take something that's hektish and you call it chulin, that's useless. It's like we saw in the beginning of the Masechet. If you do, you know, sort of, if you do two things, it's so wrong that it's not even going to be wrong, right? It's not even an option. So that's how we understand this. Kodashim mechalalin kodashim ve'ein chulin mechalalin kodashim. Okay, kodashim can be mechalal kodashim, but chulin can't be mechalal kodashim. So if you have an intent that it's going to be l'shem chulin, it's not disqualified. Mativ Rava, Rava now questions. Amar Rabbi Yossi. Af mi shelo haya b'libo l'shem achami kol elu, kasher shu t'nai beitin. Okay, what's this? Rabbi Yossi said, we saw this in the Mishnah, that if you say it's going to be, right, even if you don't have any intent at all, then it's kasher. And not only b'dieved, but l'chatchila, you're not supposed to have intent about what the korban is because it's a t'nai beitin, and we don't even have the wrong intent to mess up the korban. So therefore, they instituted that you shouldn't even have any intent. So now, what do they infer from here? Tama shelo haya b'libo klal. It sounds like, how is it going to be kasher if you have zero intent? But you can imagine that what? Haya, ha, haray, what can you infer from here? Haya b'libo l'shem chulin pasul. But it sounds like if you had any wrong intent, whether it's the wrong korban or even the wrong that it be chulin, it sounds like it's pasul, and that goes against what we just saw a minute ago, that once you do the shem chulin, well, that's clearly not going to mess you up. Amale Abaye, Dilma lo haya klal kasher umiratzeh. Ha haya b'libo l'shem chulin kasher ve'eino miratzeh. So maybe they're saying like this. If you didn't have any intent, it's kasher. And not only is it kasher, but it actually, remember we said, it's even l'chatchila, it works. There's all different levels. There's kasher, and it works. There's kasher, but yet it doesn't work, and you need to bring a new korban. That was how we started the Masechet, with all these zvachim that you do shalo l'shma. As long as they're not right, we have the category of those that were totally disqualified. That's the pasul. And then we have the category of those that are kasher, which means you keep going on with your korban, but you haven't affected atonement, and you have to redo it. So they're saying maybe the intent here of Rabbi Yossi, which sounds like it, is that these are kasher, and you actually fulfill your obligation with it, especially if it's Tanai Beit Din. Therefore, what does it seem to imply? If your intent was l'shem chulin, so it doesn't mess you up, but it also doesn't work. Okay, so you're at the in-between categories. We have three categories, and we've seen these three categories across the board. There's kasher and it works, there's pasul and it doesn't work, and there's the in-between, which is it's kasher, however, it doesn't work. So therefore, maybe that's the intent, okay? And therefore, ha'ya b'libo l'shem chulin kasher ve'eino miratzeh. So if you intended a korban, you took this korban, you intended l'shem chulin, so you can't mess it up, but it also doesn't work for you. Amar Rabbi Elazar, chatat sheshchata l'shem chulin kshera, mishum chulin psula. He says that if you shecht it with the intent that it be chulin, it's kshera. But if you shecht it mishum chulin, now what does that mean? It means the first case we're assuming you know it's a korban, but when you're shechting it, you say I'm doing this l'shem chulin for whatever strange reason you would do that. But what if you thought it was actually chulin and you sacrificed it, intending that you're just sacrificing an animal to roast on the fire and eat? And not that it was actually a korban. So if you do it for that reason, he says, that's pasul. In other words, you can't use that as a korban at this point because you basically desecrated it we'll talk about this in a minute, that it's really what we call mit'asik, where there's a difference between shchita of kodshim and shchita of chulin. So if you know that you're shechting chulin, but you say I'm doing l'shem chulin, so you know it's kodshim. So you're doing a shechita of kodshim, you just have this intent that it's l'shem chulin. But if you think that it's actually chulin, then your act is not an act of shechita kodshim. And you can't, it's not kasher at all. Okay? So therefore he's going to say, and they're going to equate it with this case, even though it's not exactly, they're going to say it's like this case. Okay? You can read Rashi. It says, kasavur shehem chulin. Okay? And that's called mit'asik. We've seen mit'asik when it comes to Shabbat also. Where you're not even, mit'asik is usually used a little differently. We'll see how they use it a little differently here. Kidibai mine Shmuel me Rav Huna, just like Shmuel asked Rav Huna, minayin le mit'asik bekodshim shehu pasul. How do you know that if you're mit'asik bekodshim, that it's pasul? So exactly what mit'asik here is a little tricky. Rashi says, shochet kodshim velo bekavana. It sounds like you have a knife in your hand and you were trying to do something else and maybe an animal came in your way and you managed to shech the animal as you were, right, putting your knife down or something like that. That's the general case of mitasik, where you're doing an act, but you're not really doing the act that actually happened, right? You lean against a wall and the light switch, right, goes on or off on Shabbat. That's mitasik.
The word they use is unwitting, which is...
Right. But unwitting can mean all sorts of... I mean, right. Exactly what kind of unwitting is... The typical unwitting of mitasik is that you intended to do an act, but not the act that actually got done. So you intend to lean against the wall, and you know, you did intend to lean against the wall, but you didn't intend to knock the light switch. So that's what you intend. You had this knife in your hand. You were doing something, right? Mit'asik b'dvarim achirim. You're dealing with something else, but somehow the act happens. So mit'asik b'kodshim, how do you know that it's pasul? Shene'emar v'shachat et ben abakar l'fnei Hashem. Now, ben abakar appears previously. So you don't need to say, you could have just said v'shachat oto. Why did you say it ben abakar? Ad sh'tehei shchita l'shem ben abakar. You have to have intent to actually slaughter this animal. So they take that one step further to say that that also our case would be like mitasek. Okay, that by intending to slaughter an animal, it's a little different, because here you did have intent to slaughter, but you intended to slaughter the animal in order to roast the meat and eat it for your own purposes, for chulin, not for kachin.
Why would you do that at the beginning?
Right, exactly.
Right. Well, first of all, the shechita doesn't have to be done, right, where does it actually have to be done? The shechita has to be done in the... It's have to be done at Har HaBayit. It certainly doesn't need to be done in the Azara. So you're not in the Azara.
It's outside, actually.
Right. It can be done outside. So maybe it has to be done in Yerushalayim, but I forget all the details now. But it's not as... It could be done by a Zar, not by a Kohen. You know, the Shechita in general, we said sometimes it's considered one of the Avodot for certain issues. For certain issues, it's not really considered part of the Avodah. So it could be that, you know... You took an animal that was kachim and you slaughtered it thinking it was chulin. So if the whole thing was, you know, for the sake of chulin, yes. But if, and then the question is, what exactly is this other case? L'shem chulin. There it's, you knew it was kachim. Maybe you wanted to mess it up, right? You knew it was kachim and yet you slaughtered it. There's intent, right? That's there's wrong evil. Intent. Well, pigul, again. No, it's.
Pigul is a right.
Pigul is chutzlis mano or chutzlim kamo. Here you're doing it with intent. Right, it's more like me'ila. Right. So the question is, would you disqualify it? But then they say it's not really me'ila because the way they view this is if you do it l'shem chulin, chulin doesn't mess up your korban, basically. You can't do that.
Even it's an intentional...
Yes.
Wrong.
Yes. Yes, because it's so off. Because, no, think about it. If... It's like, we talked about this before. When things are so off, you clearly didn't mean what you meant to say. It's, you know it's kachim. You said it was for the wrong korban. So that, you know, there's you're kind of moving a kachim to a kachim, which can be done. But you can't move a kachim to a chulin. You can't do that. So because you can't do it, so your act is not considered significant.
Because once it's hekdesh, it's hekdesh.
Right, exactly. So you can't take it out and make a chulin. Okay, and that's again how they darshan that first pasuk we saw for those who came late. They darshan this pasuk below yechalalu akachei b'nei Yisrael, which generally means don't desecrate. They view it as, and you cannot cause kachim to become chulin. Okay, you cannot do it. Okay, amar le zobi adenohi balakev minayin. As I understand, you learn it for this pasuk, but we've already learned that in order for something to be ma'akev, right, remember, there's it could be, you know, like. The fact that it has to be the Ben Abakar, how do you know that it's going to be Pasul? And as you might say, well, it's supposed to be, but if you didn't, it's okay. So how do you know that it really is Pasul? Le'akev, Amar Le, oh, there's another Pasuk. Generally, we say things have to be, have two Pasukim in order to say that it's Ma'akev, as opposed to just being a mitzvah, like ideally you should do it like this. Amar Le, Lirtzonchem Tizbechuhu. Okay, that's v'chit tizbechu zevach shalim la'Hashem. Lirtzonchem tizbechu, that generally means in a way that God will accept it. But here we understand, lirtzonchem lida'atchem zevichu. You have to have da'at that it's a zevach. Okay, and if you have da'at that it's a chulin, then it's going to be pasul. Okay, again, the da'at that it's a chulin means you thought 100% it was a chulin, you didn't even know it was kachim. And you slaughtered it thinking it was, thinking it was chulin. Okay, now we get back to something we mentioned earlier in the Masechet, because we had trouble starting the Masechet without dealing with this. But here's the Ikar Sugya. She'en ha-machshava holechet ela achar ha-oved. Right, according to our Mishnah, what do we say? Right, it's a Tanai Beitin. Why is it a Tanai Beitin according to Rabbi Yossi? Because since the machshava goes based on the Kohen, therefore we want it. We don't want the Kohen to mess up a korban for somebody else, because what's going to happen? You're the Baal HaKorban, you give responsibility to the Kohen, and what does the Kohen do? He has a Pigul Machshava, and if he has a Pigul Machshava, it's going to mess you up, or some other Machshava that's going to mess you up. And therefore, right, in this mission, we're actually not talking about that, we're talking about other Machshava, but whatever it is, right, his Machshava can mess up your korban, and you'll have to bring a new one. And therefore comes Rabbi Yossi, and he says, try not to have machshavo, right? Let's just institute that we do it with stam, so that the Kohen can't mess up the makrivs, right? I shouldn't call him the makriv yet, we'll see in a minute, we're going to call him the makriv, but the person whose korban it is. Matnitin, our Mishnah, now it seems, by the way, from the Mishnah, yes, Rabbi Yossi disagrees and says it doesn't have to be l'shem all these things, because let's try to avoid problems, but the Tanakhama seems to agree with his base opinion that whose machshava is the one that's important? The Kohen's machshava. And if you remember, we discussed in the beginning that there is an opinion that holds that it's the makriv, the person, the bala korban, we'll call him, the owner of the sacrifice, the one who's supposed to bring the sacrifice, it's actually his machshava that we're talking about all along. Okay, and it says now that our Mishnah, neither opinion in our Mishnah, follows the following Tana. D'tanya, Amar Rabbi Elazar b'Rabbi Yossi. Okay, Rabbi Elazar b'Rabbi Yossi says, Shamati, okay, I learned, Shahaba'alim mifaglim, that the pigo machshava we're talking about is the person whose sacrifice it is, who's not standing there in the mikdash at the time, but while the kohen's doing it, and then it becomes tricky how they, especially without watches, right, how they would know that his machshava was going on at the exact time of the kohen, right? Technically speaking, I'm not sure how they figured this out, right? In other words, how you would ever know if something was pigul, knowing what he said and when he said it, and was someone checking that when he said it, that was the same time he was doing the shchita or the zrika or the kabbalah or halacha, etc. Anyway, so now the Mishnah doesn't follow this opinion because he says the Baalim are mefaglim. Amar Rava, my tamid Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Yossi, ta'amar kra vihikriv hamakriv. Okay, it says vihikriv hamakriv. Okay, this is Bamidbar Tevav pasuk Dalid. Vihikriv hamakriv korbano laHashem in chatzol edisaron balu b'rivi tayin shemen. Who's the makriv in this pasuk? It's hikriv hamakriv korbano laHashem. Whose korban is it? The bala korban. So the makriv there is the bala korban. And in our pasuk of Pigul, im ha'achol ya'achel, right? Mukarzal shlamav. It said there. It said lo yeratze hamakriv oto, right? And Pigul yeah, right? That. So who's the Pigul? The makriv. And who's the makriv? Oh, we learned from the other pasuk. The makriv is the bala korban. And we always said, oh, the makriv is the one who's actually dealing with the sacrifice. But here we see from this other pasuk in Bamidbar, we see that the makriv could be the bala korban, and that's his proof. And now, very interestingly, Abaye is going to say, we've seen this a number of times, and if you remember, at some point, we did some research, and we saw Abaye was one of the people who does this a lot. Amar Abaye, Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Shim ben Elazar. Interesting, they're all Elazar or Rabbi Eliezer, or some connection to that name, but that's just coincidental. Kulhu svira lehu, ze mechashev, v'ze oved havya machshava. All three of these people have the same the same opinion that someone could be doing the work and someone else could be doing the thinking, and the thinking of the person who's not the one actually doing the act can affect the person doing the act. Okay? And we're going to see it in three different places because the only one who says it about our case is here. And then we're going to make a comparison and say, does, if you said it there, would the same person say the same thing in all the other cases? Like, who would agree with who? Okay? And who would be obvious would agree with who? In other words, they all come from the same mindset that there could be a situation where the machshava of one person can affect the act of a different person. Right? So in our case, it's obvious. The machshava of the makri, the bala korban, we'll call him, can affect...
Is
no.
The same as the Zoveach?
No, the Zoveach is the...
The actual
Kohen. Is the Kohen, I would assume. Okay. Although it could be, depending on the context.
Depends on
the context. Right. There they call the Zoveach, right. Let's just call him the owner of the Korban versus the Kohen. You can see that these terms are interchangeable in various places. It depends who they're talking about. So, and that's what causes the confusion, because the makriv, who is the makriv, right? That's our person. We know it's the makriv, who's the one who's pigul. Question is the makriv the bala korban, is the makriv the kohen? So, the thinking of the one who owns the sacrifice can affect the act of somebody else, who in this case is the kohen. What's very interesting, I think it's interesting that in all three cases, we don't paskin like these opinions. Nobody agrees with this lahalacha. Okay, it wasn't paskin that way lahalacha. But these three people hold in three different cases. Okay, let's talk about the other two cases now. So first, they're going to say, Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Yossi, Hadamaran. That's our case. Okay, so check, we got the first one. Rabbi Eliezer, Ditnan, Hashochet, Leoved Kochavim. Let's say I'm a shochet. Okay, and I slaughter an animal, a non-Jew brings me an animal, or you know, I have an animal and he asks me to slaughter it for him. Am I allowed to do that? What's the concern? The concern is that maybe his intent is to sacrifice this animal to Avodah Zarah. Okay, back to Masechet Avodah Zarah, right? Hashochet lo ve kochavim, shchitato kshera. Okay? There's no problem. Even if his intent is for avodah zarah, that doesn't affect your shechita, you're shechting it in order to sell it to him, right? And your intent is that you're selling it to him to eat. Your intent is not that you're slaughtering it for the purposes of avodah zarah. If your intent is that you're slaughtering it for the purposes of avodah zarah, so it's no good, because you can't have intent to slaughter something for avodah zarah. But if you, and then get benefit from it, right? Because then you're selling it, okay? But if you slaughter for the intent to give it to him, so it's kshera. The Rabbi Eliezer posel, because what does he say? The intent, then so the assumption is, number one, you have to assume that the majority of non-Jewish, your ovdei kochavim, we should call them, right? The intent of the majority of them who ask for someone to slaughter an animal is for the intent of sacrificing it. And then you have to assume, well, then his machshava is probably for slaughter for avodah zarah, and therefore you can't, this animal is pasul, okay? So that's what you see now, that the intent of one person can affect the act of another person. Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, so what about him? Ditzna, now we're moving into Dinei Hotzah. Okay, what are the rules of Dinei Hotzah? If I'm going to take something, Mirushut L'Rushut on Shabbat, right, I can't take something out of Rushut Yachid and bring it into Rushut Arabim or vice versa. What objects, if you remember, way, way back to Masechet Shabbat, those who learned Masechet Shabbat with us, or however, you have to take out something that's of significance, that has value, that has need. So there's rules about what has need. So first of all, it has to have a purpose for human beings, okay? If it's not relevant for humans, then it's not hotza. The second thing is, it has to be something that the person considers important. Now, how do we know if he considers it important? So one of the criteria are, would he be matznia? Would he hide it? Now, hiding was a way of preserving things, okay? Lishmor, right? They would, you know, hide it so that nobody would steal it, let's say. So if they would hide it, then that would mean that they thought this was important enough to hide. If you have a little bit of something, you know, sometimes it's an amount. The amount is so insignificant that you wouldn't bother putting it aside, because, right? So then, if you take that out, you do hotza'ah on Shabbat, you're not chayav, because that item is not significant. So klal amar Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, kol she'en kasher lahatznia, ve'en matzniin kamohu. Okay, so let's first start with his kol. Anything that's kasher lahatznia, in theory you could hide it, but a matznin kamo, but people don't hide this type of item, okay? But let's say you did. Let's say the average person wouldn't, but let's say you're very poor. And for you, that's really significant. So you would hide that type of item, and you would take it out. You would be chayav, even though, right, certain halakha where we go by the general populace, and there's certain halakha where we go by specifically you. So if you were to take that item out, you'd be chayav. So huchshar lezeh vihitznio, uba acher vihotzio, nitchayev zeh b'machshava shal zeh. Let's say I have an item, okay, let's say for all intents and purposes, I have this pen cover, okay, which is not really significant, okay? But let's say to someone else it's significant. Okay? So let's say the opposite. It's mine, okay? I started with that. For me, it's significant. For you, it's not. If you took out my pen cap, the one that was mine, that I gave, in, for me, this was important, and you took it out, according to Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, you'd be chayav. Because you've taken something that I've had machshava about, right? I've turned it into something significant. And now, it's not only significant for me, it's significant for anybody, okay? So according to him, my machshava can affect your hotza'ah.
Whether that person knows about it or not.
Ah, so that's a good question. Whether they know about it or not. Well, then they could be shogeg. But it would still be hotza'ah. It would be hotza'ah b'shogeg.
Right.
Wouldn't be b'mezid. If they knew about it, then it would be hotza'ah b'mezid.
Knew about the importance to you.
Yeah, exactly. Okay? So there, now it happens we don't paskin this way, because it's maybe because of what you're saying, which is, how's he supposed to know whether I'm machshiv this or not, and how could you... Right? In other words, again, this is, it's interesting because we're ending the whole section on machshava here, and I think it's pertinent. I think it's very relevant that they're ending it all about machshava, and can my machshava affect your act, right? So it's a very, that's the whole problem, is your question, is the whole issue with this. How can what I think, and maybe expressed in words, maybe never expressed in words, how could that You know, and even if I expressed it in words, I certainly didn't change the status, the way it looks, the way, right? There's no way you would know that if you came. Even if I expressed it in words, you weren't necessarily there when I expressed it in words. So how that could affect other things. So now comes Abai and he says, all these people say the same thing. So now the Gemara says, Travaihu itluhu de Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Yossi. And the other two would definitely agree with Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Yossi. Why? Because hashta b'chutz amrinan bifnim mebaya is what's the most obvious case that we're going to consider one person's machshava affecting someone else? In the case where there's a din mid'oraita that machshava is significant. Where do we have a din d'oraita that machshava is significant? Pigul. So in the case where the Torah says, yechashev, right? It's going to be important, your machshava. Of course, if you say machshava of one person affects the act of a different person in other cases that aren't pigul, of course you're going to say it in a case of the korban. In a case of bifnim, we're already bifnim, we've been discussing for four prakim, how important people's machshavot are regarding korbanot. Of course you're going to say it bifnim. So therefore, the other two guys for sure would agree with Rabbi, confusing all their names, with Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yossi lately, who did Travayu, and you could say the reverse, which is the Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Yossi clearly wouldn't necessarily hold by the other two guys, and we have no way to know that. Dilma bifnimu damrinam b'chutz lo amrinam, for the exact same reason. Maybe what he's saying would only be bifnim in the mikdash, but anything b'chutz, like shechting something for Ovei Kochavim or Hotza'a b'Shabbat, he wouldn't necessarily say. Rabbi Shimon b'Rabbi Elazar ben Elazar, who says by Shabbat, you would say itle to Rabbi Elazar. He would hold also by Rabbi Elazar, who talks about the shchita of Novei Kochavim. Why? Hashta b'Shabbat amrinam b'avodah kochavim mebaya. If he's going to say it by Shabbat, of course he'll also say it by Avodah Zarah. Now, why is that? This is based on, there's a comparison between shechting something for Avodah Zarah and shechting something for God, right? Because there's a pasuk that says, Zoveach l'Elohim yecheram, Bilti laHashem levado. Right, anyone who sacrifices for a god, another different god, will be yecheram, right? Like destroy cherem. Only laHashem levado can you sacrifice. So they already make this comparison between sacrificing for God, sacrificing for avodah zarah. So therefore, if you would say in the shechita case that the machshava would work, then you would also obviously say it in the Shabbat case. Okay, so therefore, if you would say it in Shabbat, I said the reverse. If you said it in Shabbat, you would obviously also say it in Avodah Zarah, because, again, the assumption is the most obvious case is the Mikdash. And the Mikdash is already similar to Avodah Zarah. Shabbat is already very different. So Shabbat, if you say it by Shabbat, you're for sure going to say it for the other two. Rabbi Eliezer, lately, to Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar. But Rabbi Eliezer, who says it by Avodah Zarah, you can already guess what they're going to say, right? Wouldn't say it by Hotzah. Because Dilma b'avodah kochavim hu da'amart ke'ein bifnim, right? He might have said it only in Avodah Zarah, because that's like bifnim, because we make this comparison, aval Shabbat, and not only that, they're adding an additional thing, which is Shabbat has a whole additional level. We've seen this before many times. Shabbat melechet machshevet ascha Torah. In order for something to be chayav in Shabbat, it has to be a creative act which has intent. Now you have to have intended to do the act, that's why mitasek on Shabbat is patur. Okay, you have to have intent to do it because it's like God who created the world with intent and with machshava. So there you might say, well, you need your own machshava, not someone else's machshava. Okay? Hachan alach beit shamai. Finished with the issue of pigul and all that, all the machshava. Okay? That started really from the beginning of the Masechet about l'shem chata, l'shem shlamim, all that. Now we're going to start Ezum Koman Shel Zvachim, which we say every morning in Tefillah, right? Those are Karbanot, right? If you, the part, right? Not, maybe not everyone says them, but the part after Berachat HaShachar, before they say Baruch Shamar, there's this section, which, by the way, one of the main reasons given for why we say this is there were two, when you say Berachat HaTorah in the morning, you're supposed to learn Torah. And we say the very short, right? We say three psukim, Recha Hashem Yishmerecha, and then we say Elu Dvarim, right? We take a braita, we take a very simple Mishnah and a braita. Okay, the braita is supposed to be sort of Gemara-like, okay? And, you know, we say that, and that we're Yotze. But there's remnants of a different version that kind of stayed in our tefillah, which is that you say I think if I remember all of it correctly, but I think that's why we say Shema there, that Shema also connects with that, that it's Limud Torah and Yom Pesukim, and then Ezum Koman Shel Zvachim, which is Mishnayot. And that those are Mishnayot we say. Okay, maybe when we get to the end of the parak, we'll try to think about why Dafka they chose this parak of Mishnayot, of all Mishnayot to say. And what's going to be fun, I hope, for me it was fun, is that reading this Mishnah, all of a sudden, all these terms, if you ever said Ezum Koman Shel Zvachim, and you said mumbo jumbo, right? What does this all mean? At this point, we actually understand what most of these things mean. Okay? Ezehu Mekoman Shel Zvachim. This is going to basically go, now Zvachim generally means Shlamim, but in this case, obviously, it's going to mean all Korbanot. And basically, we're going to go through, where do they do the Shechita? Where do they do the Kabbalat Adam? Okay? Where do they do the sprinklings of the blood? Okay? It's all the details. What do they do with the Shirayim? Okay, all the details that we've seen, and they're going to go through all the different categories of Korbanot. Okay, for this I brought maps, so we can look at the maps today. Okay, if you're at home, you can try a map, looking a map online of the Beit HaMikdash, it'll help you. Ezehu Mekoman Shel Zvachim. So we're going to start, obviously, although the Gemara is going to question later why and explain, but we're going to start with Kodesh HaKodeshim, we're going to start with the highest level. Okay, what are Kodesh HaKodeshim? Chatat. Asham, right? They're generally the ones that we don't eat. Okay? Chatat, Asham, right? They're just the Kohanim eat parts of them, but the regular people don't eat. Ola, which all goes up to God. And Shalmei Tzibur, which is the Kfasim that we bring, Kivsei Atzeret, they're called. They're the Kfasim that we bring with the Shtei Alechem on Chag HaShavuot. So where do we do this? Vachim, Kodshei Kodashim, Shchitatam, B'Tzafon. Okay? Let's just remember all the machlokot we saw about that. Okay? So here we have B'Tzafon, okay? So if you look at your map, the way my map goes, Tzafon is at the bottom, even though Tzafon is north. Okay, the northern side is at the bottom. The Mizbeach is basically, right, we've seen a machloket, whether the Mizbeach starts, right, the edge of the Mizbeach is exactly at the center point of the room between Tzafon and Darom. In this map, it's actually not, I don't think. I think it juts a little bit into the south side, you can see, because the steps coming out of the ulam are really the midpoint of the room, right? That's centered in the room. So it's a little bit not centered, a little bit goes into the tzafon side. But according to many opinions, it's fully in the darom side. And then, basically, opposite the mizbeach, right, is tzafon. So the first opinion is, you can even see it's a little darkened on this map, that where the Beit HaMikdashayim is, that whole part, first of all, that makes sense. The Beit HaMikdashayim is there, because that's where, what are the Beit HaMikdashayim? Those are those rings that they held down the animal's necks in order to do the Shechita. So, basically, you have the whole area opposite the Mizbeach going all the way to the wall on the Tzafon. That's one opinion. Another opinion says it's also Ben HaUlam LeMizbeach, right? The whole area would include the whole area until the Ulam, basically. So, again, it would all have to be on the Tzafon side, but the Tzafon side, from there all the way to the Ulam, which is the room that led, right, the hallway that led into the Hechal. And then the third opinion says, no, it's actually the entire Tzafon side until the Ulam, meaning from the entrance to the Ezrat Kohanim, okay, from the entrance, maybe even to the Ezrat Yisrael, I think, from the entrance of the Ezrat Yisrael all the way into the, all the way until the Ulam. Nobody thinks that this area opposite the Hechal, right? The Hechal is narrower than the actual room. So the part on the northern side of the Hechal where there isn't anything, nobody thinks that you can do Shechita there. Okay? It's only until the Ulam. Okay. That's Shechita Tam B'Tzafon. Par v'se'ir shel Yom HaKippurim. So now we're going to go into the details. So the par, which is the animal that the Kohen brought for, to atone for his sins, his families, and all the Kohanim. And the Seir, which was brought for Bnei Yisrael, right? I'm just repeating some things, right? There was that Seir and the Seir Mishtaleach, which got sent off and wasn't sacrificed. And those are the two that we talked the other day about. They mixed the bloods, right? And when did they mix the bloods? It's a bit of a machloket. But those, all the bloods got sprinkled. We saw there were 43 or maybe 48 sprinklings, 47 or maybe 48 sprinklings. So the Parvus Seir Shel Yom HaKippurim, Shechitatam B'Tzafon. Okay, let's just start with, there was a first line, which is Ezum Koman Shel Zvachim, Kodshei Kodeshim, Shechitatam B'Tzafon. Now we're going into more detail. Okay, now it tells us. Well, the par and the seir of Yom HaKippurim, that's one of them. Shechitatam b'tzafon. V'kibul damam b'klei sharei b'tzafon. B'klei sharei b'tzafon. You also have to catch the blood and, right, accept the blood in a kli sharet, in the tzafon, if you remember we talked about that, the kohen actually has to be standing in the tzafon, whereas the shechita, remember we talked about you could be standing outside and put your knife inside, but with this you have to actually be inside. Now, why the Mishnah didn't say, by the way, ezum koman shasvachim kodesh kodeshim shechita dam tzafon v'kibul damam v'kli sharet b'tzafon in the original, you know, koteret sentence, right? That's the first sentence that basically like leads into all of them. Even though really all of them it's true for, the Gemara is going to ask, why doesn't it say that in the first sentence? Because the kibul daman, all the kibul daman is b'klei sharei b'tzafon also. So why don't we say it? We're going to see in the Gemara. V'da'aman ta'un hazaya. This already we know it shouldn't say in the beginning because each one is going to have different hazayot. Okay, that we already learned. So where do you do with the sprinkling of the blood? So here we do Alben Habadim, which is between the poles of the Aron Kodesh inside the Kodesh Kodeshim. Okay, so go all the way into the Kodesh Kodeshim, right? You can see the two lines there. Those are the Badim. That's the Aron. And inside, right between those two, right, opposite those, in between the Badim, opposite that, that's where he would sprinkle the blood of the Par and the Seir. Ve'al ha'parochet. Oh, by the way, I wanted to show you. The Koran has really good pictures of, and the map is good, but the Koran has really good pictures of all the places, right? Like here's the parochet. Right? There's a nice picture. You can just pass this around. You'll see the parochet, the Mizbeach HaZahav, all the things we're going to discuss. I think on the next page there's also another picture. I forget, but you can look. So he'd sprinkle it on the parochet, which is, he'd be standing, you can see from the picture. He's standing, you can see the menorah in the picture. He's standing next to the menorah, because the menorah is the inner thing there, right? He's standing next to the menorah and actually the Shulchan Lechem HaPanim, according to this picture. I think there's a debate about where exactly they're all located. But he's standing there facing the Kodesh Kodeshim, and he sprinkles the blood on the parochet. Ve'al Mizbeach HaZahav, right? And on the Mizbeach HaZahav, which you see is closer to the entrance of the Hechal. Matana achat mehem ma'akevet. Okay, that goes back to what we saw before. If you don't do all four of the sprinklings on the Mizbeach HaZahav, well, you haven't done anything. Sheyarei hadam hayashofech. Then what do? Right? So that's all inside, and then you go outside, and you take the extra blood, and what do you do with it? Hayashofech al yisod ma'aravish al Mizbeach HaRitzon. Oh, that's the picture on the next page. The yisod. Right? There's a good picture of the yisod on Mizbeach. Right? Remember, that's on two sides of the Mizbeach. There was this gutter type of thing that would collect the blood, so you pour it on the yisod. Vim lo natan, but if you didn't put it on the yisod, lo ikev. That's not ma'akev. Parim hanisrafim usirim hanisrafim. Okay, the parim and the sirim that get burned. Okay, this is the sirei avodah kochavim and the paralim devar shel tzibur and the parakohen mashiach. Okay, those three, shchitatam b'tzafon, v'kibul damam b'klei sharei b'tzafon, Vidaman ta'un hazaya ala parochet v'al mizbeach hazahav. Okay, not bein abadim. You don't go into Kodesh Kodeshim. We all know that. You only go in Yom HaKippurim. So all these, you have to shechtem b'tzafon. You have to accept the blood in the kli sharei b'tzafon. And you have to sprinkle the blood on all the other places. The parochet and the mizbeach hazahav. And matana achat mehem ma'akevet. Again, you don't do one matana, it's no good. Shirei adam ha'yashofech ha'yesod ma'aravi shel mizbeach hachitzon. Again, you pour it on the yesod of the Mizbeach HaChitzon, v'im lo natan lo ikev. Ve'elu, all these, by the way, I forgot the other day when someone asked me about it, I forgot about the par and the seir, what we do with the meat. So now I remembered the other day, I forgot to tell you, but anyway, it's here. Elu ve'elu nisrufin al Beit HaDeshen. All of these get burned. Remember the Beit HaDeshen, it's outside Yerushalayim. You take the animal and you burn the entire thing outside on the Beit HaDeshen. You can see why they started with these, because these are not eaten at all. Right? Nothing of them gets eaten, not even to the kohanim. Okay, so the whole thing is nisrafin abet hadeshen. Okay, and that's why it's called the bet hadeshen, because that's where they would also put the ashes that we discussed the other day. Remember when the ashes collected, there were too many ashes on the mizbeach, they would take them out to that place. Okay, it says, utziyat hadeshen el michutz lamachaneh. Okay, and in the Parim and Nisrafim, you can look at Rashi, it says, el shefech hadeshen, they call it. Okay, and then they're mekish, Yom HaKippurim to the Par Halim Devar Shel Tzibur, and that's from the whole drasha of Zeh, right? The Zeh was the Par of Adak, right? Yom HaKippurim, which we made a hekesh and then said, oh, it's true for that, it's true for that, and that's how we know that we also burn them outside. Okay, so now the Gemara asked what I said they were going to ask, which is, V'ninne nami v'kibul damam b'klei sharet b'tzafon. Why didn't it say in the very first sentence, what's the assumption here? The assumption is that the first line says what's true about all of them, And then it starts to go into detail and tells you, well, what's the same and what's different. So already in the first line, it should have told you everything that's the same for all of them. And in fact, klei sharei, kibul b'klei sharei, adamam b'klei sharei b'tzafon, is the same for all of them. So what do they say? Ah, kevan de'ika asha mitzora de'kibul damo b'yadhu, sharei. Ah, but there is one exception. What's the exception? The asha mitzora. The asha mitzora, you accept the blood in your hand. They say, velo. And that's why he left it out, right? That's why the Tana didn't put it in the first line. So they said, velo? What do you mean, the asha mitzora, you collect it biyad and not the kli? V'hakatane la lekaman, doesn't it say further on in the Mishnah, in this parak? What does it say? Asham nazir v'asha mitzora, shchitatam b'tzafon, v'kibul damam b'kli sharei b'tzafon. It says the asha mitzora is kli, right? You do accept the dam b'kli sharei b'tzafon. So now they say, Meikara Savar, when the Mishnah put together this thing, it doesn't really mean, Meikara often means, first he thought this, then he realized and changed his mind, but it's not really that here. Here what it means is, Meikara Savar, Kibul Damo Bayadhu Shairi. Bekevan de los Sagile Ela Bekli Hadar Tanye. Okay, I'm going to explain this line later. Let's read first because it'll make more sense when you read the whole thing. Ditanya. Vilakach. Okay, here's the pasuk about the mitzora. Vilakach kohen midam hasham. Okay, the kohen takes from the dam hasham, which seems to sound like kibul. V'natan kohen al tznuch ozan mitehara yimaniv avon yadon yimaniv avon raglo yimaniv. If you remember, what happens with the hasham? There's two things you do with the blood. One is you sprinkle the blood like you do with every other korban. And the other is you take the blood and you put it on the ozen, the bohen yado ayimanit, and the bohen raglo ayimanit. So you put, the kohen takes the blood and puts it on. So there were two acceptances of dam going on. One was for the mizbeach, and one was to put on the mitzora himself. So they say like this. Because it says vilakach, you might have thought, yachol b'kli, that the blood, in order to put on the ear, the finger, and the toe, would be in a kli. You'd have to accept in a kli. Talmud lamar v'natan. Since it says in that pasuk v'lakach v'natan, ma nitina ba'atzmo shel kohen. How does the kohen do the nitina? Atzmo means with his etzba, with his hand, right? He uses his finger to do it. So af lekicha ba'atzmo shel kohen. Okay? So therefore, they learn from this pasuk that actually, that when the blood is collected from the asham mitzora, from the animal of the asham, is the blood is collected in order to put on the ear, the finger, and the toe of the mitzora, it's done, the kohen collects it with his finger, not with his hand, not with a kli. So then they say, well, if that's the case, yachol af lemizbeach kein, you might have thought the same thing for the mizbeach, he collects it by hand. Talmud lamar, the pasuk before says, ki kachatata asham hu. Ah, the asham is like a chatat. In what way is it like a chatat? Ma chatat tu'una kli, af asham tu'una kli. Nimtzeta ta'omer, from here the writer continues and says, to kind of summarize, Asha mitzora, shnei kohanim mekablim et damo. Echa biyad ve'echa bikli. There's two different acceptances by two different kohanim. One accepts it in a kli to put the blood on the mizbeach, and one accepts it by yad in order to put it on the mitzora himself. So now, balo etzal mizbeach, zeshe kiblo b'yad. I didn't read it right. Zeshe kiblo b'kli, balo etzal mizbeach. Zeshe kiblo b'yad, balo etzal mitzora. Okay, so now we have to go back and explain the first part. So that part we got. So now we understand that there's two kohanim, two kibulim. One is for the mizbeach, and that goes in a kli, and the other is for the mitzora, and that is dem b'yad. So there's two different kohanim who do each one. So now let's go back to the beginning. Me'ikara savar kibul demo b'yadu shayre. Originally, he didn't want to put it in the Tana, didn't want to say it in the koteret line, the title sentence, because there is part of Asha Mitzora that doesn't get collected in a kli. And that's why he didn't put it in the first line, because there's just one exception. But kema de lo sagi le'ela b'kli, but since you actually do have to collect the blood in a kli in order to do this rikata, in order to do this rikata dam on the mizbeach, therefore, it taught it later in the mission when it got to the Asha Mitzora, it says, kibul damam b'klei sharei b'tzafon, because it was referring to the other aspect. So since it has two kohanim, we're dealing with it, therefore there is part of the dam isn't accepted in klei kibul, and that's why it didn't say, ezu mekomat shel zvachim, קודשי קודשים שחיטתם בצפון וכיבור דמם בכלי שרי בצפון. It eliminated that line because of this one kohen who accepts the blood of the Metzorah in order to put it on the Metzorah itself. The blood, not of the Metzorah. The blood, that didn't sound good. The blood of the Asham of the Metzorah in order to put it on the Metzorah.